They fucked up and they let me host again. Yeah, it's your boy back with the boys for another episode of the Banter Pub FC, the sauciest team in the game, the spiciest takes on the pitch. I mean, we do this song and dance. Well, how many episodes away from like 100 episodes? I think it's something we're probably in like the 30, 25 episode region, probably. This is episode 71. So let's go ahead and let's get straight into it. I am your host this week, Joseph. Well, shored up by, you know, the one and only El Capitan Neil, the man on the wheels of steel roster, and of course, the troublemaker, Jonathan, the international playboy, if you will. Anyway, let's go ahead and get into that segment that we all know and love. It's called Around the Pitch. We're going to be doing something a little bit different this week because it's going to be very cup heavy. So we're going to talk about some shenanigans in the FA Cup. Very exciting fourth round. Very exciting. The Bundesliga got up to some nonsense. Two matches in particular. A certain Bayern Munich lost and a certain Dortmund got thrashed. Then we go and talk about the Milanese derby. And then we'll finish up with the Champions League and the Europa League. Very, very tasty stuff. And we'll even make a special mention of at least one Europa Conference League club who has actually been doing gangbusters in that competition. Not only did they dump Spurs out, but they've done it again. Get into that very much later. Followed up with that, we'll pay a few bills. Then we'll go ahead and get into the main segment, which this week, we've got to talk about some bullshit the FIFA president said about hosting the World Cup every 2 years. Apparently, he believes it could reduce refugees. So, yeah, that's, you know, obviously we're going to go ahead and tear him a new asshole, aren't we? And then, of course, we're going to talk about how the German soccer coaches got banned for using fake vaccine passes. It is still a pandemic. Yes, it is. Just so that we're aware. And after we pay a few more bills, we're going to talk about whatever the fuck we want to talk about in 60 seconds or less. That's right. Extra time. So let's go ahead and get straight into it. FA Cup shenanigans. I'm going to start with Jonathan, the troublemaker, because Man United got done on penalties by Middlesbrough. So we got to hear from Manchester United's noisy neighbor first about this result. Did you catch the match? If you didn't, did you review it? What's your thoughts on it? Why are Man United so terrible? Your thoughts, please, Jonathan.
Did catch the match. And they're terrible because they have a striker that's not willing to follow the tactics of the manager, for one. That kind of kills all momentum there. And they actually could have won the match very easily, but Bruno fluffed his lines. Ronaldo missed his penalty. And Bruno missed a sitter, like open, wide open net, and hit the crossbar. Not the crossbar, my lost words. The thing that holds up the goal, not the crossbar. Middlesbrough got really lucky in the fact that their goal came from a handball that VAR, I don't think VAR is applicable in FA Cup, so they do not check it. And so
they got super lucky. But yeah, there is clear that there's a lot of players at United that need to go. They're just not following the tactics that they need to follow. And it cost them. They had to rely on a young man in Elanga. I think that's how I pronounce his name. And he missed the penalty to keep United in, because it went to penalties. He missed the crucial penalty to continue Manchester United's run in the FA Cup. And I hope he doesn't like, get the hate. This probably did come, but he doesn't deserve it. He actually was one of the better players for United. So there's going to be a lot of chopping and changing from Ragnick and co come the summertime, and they need it because, yeah, some of the players for United are not showing out at all. And yeah, that's what happened. It's great to see that they're going to go 5 or 6 years now without winning silverware. I appreciate it personally as a City fan.
We're going to save El Capitan for last because, you know what? We don't know already that you're going to have all the excuses in the world. So, you know what? We're going to go to another one of your rivals for comment. Let's go to the Liverpool representative in Rosler. Rosler, why are Man United so terrible?
Good question. It's a lot, man. I think it's just the same stuff we've been talking about, what John mentioned too, in all seriousness, just tactics. I think they just don't have like a cohesive unit, and they need to shore up their defensive mid and kind of tweak some things. I think next year will be a year when they get to kind of clean house and start over, but it just feels like a team that was piecemeal together to kind of contend and to get by, but it's not really working. They're just the personalities, the play styles. It's just not working. And they'll get there. I mean, in all seriousness, like we make jokes about United, but it's not like they don't have the money to be able to make moves and do certain things. It's just they need to decide on what kind of system they want and get the players that they need to kind of make it work. That's it.
Well, I think, first of all, they need to get a manager that's attractive enough to play for. I don't think Ralph Ragnick is going to have his interim deal extended, and for good fucking reason. The Chris Armas thing, Jesus fucking Christ. You know what? We don't have time. El Capitan, it's your turn. You might as well go ahead and explain your boy's blushes there. So what happened?
First of all, I'm not going to give any excuses. We were terrible. Credit to Middlesbrough for converting the penalties when it mattered, and we didn't. I mean, that's just the long and the short of it. I will say I'm glad it didn't get to the point where the goalkeepers were going to be kicking penalties because, you know, it was one of those kind of things where, you know, players that had, you know, what it came down to at the end of the day was Elanga, credit to him for stepping up when he needed to, you know, and he just couldn't convert his penalty. He's been playing pretty well up until that point. And I think this won't necessarily be a blemish on his record, as much as we have several United supporters who are already, you know, were obviously, as expected, racist towards him immediately after the game. And, you know, we condemn all forms of racism and xenophobia, you know, as a brand. But it's one of those kinds of things where we also expect it after a, you know, after a missed penalty or a poor performance by a black player. We shouldn't expect it, right? But, you know, it happened. And, you know, we want to protect Elanga as a brand, but also me as a United supporter, I want to make sure that his mental health is good. And I think he's going to learn from this. I don't think he normally takes penalties. I mean, obviously, penalty shootout, you know, penalties practice is something that's routine on most pitches or most practice fields. So it's not like he doesn't take penalties in practice, but this is one of those instances where that practice didn't show up on the pitch. So, you know, again, credit to Middlesbrough for converting the penalties when they mattered. And, you know, they were the better team at the end of the day. So, you know, there's really nothing else I can say. But I want to point out that I didn't give any excuses either. as for some reason everyone expected me to. You know, I'm not going to give excuses when we weren't the better team on the pitch. That doesn't make sense.
Well, I had to give you a little ribbon, didn't I? But yes, Man United were just definitely not at it against Middlesbrough. Shout out to Florian Balogun, who's doing very well on loan there at Middlesbrough as well. But I don't know, Middlesbrough are trying to get back in the Premier League, you know, and they're also trying to get back in Europe. This is a club that went to the Europa League final, famously by having the miracle run to end all miracle runs. So you know what? If winning the FA Cup is within their purview and they feel like they can go ahead and hoist that thing and get into European competition next season, have bloody at, boys. You know what I mean? That's what it's there for. So all the best to them. Speaking of giant killings, this is the reason why we love the FA Cup, because anything can happen when you have every single professional club in England and a couple of exceptions in Wales, namely Cardiff and Swansea, playing against each other in the oldest knockout tournament in the world. Non-league Boreham Wood beat AFC Bournemouth. That's correct. Non-league Boreham Wood beat Championship, Football League Championship side, AFC Bournemouth 1-0. If you don't know where Bournemouth is in England, that's fine, because most people didn't even know it was a thing until I just mentioned it. Let me give you a little backstory on this non-league club here, all right? This club plays in the fifth tier National League. They are... they're currently fifth, and they are the lowest ranked side left in the FA Cup. Don't get any lower than them. They're the ones that made it out of all the minnows to swim. Okay, their player Luke, I think it's pronounced it's not Gerard, but it's kind of pronounced like that. But Luke, it's either Gerard or Garrard. Can't remember how you pronounce it correctly. We do apologize, young man. But this guy was absolutely sensational. It was only a 1-0 victory, but I swear to God, they played the kind of defensive football that people get really excited about. You get a goal against the run of play and then you absorb all the pressure and you just stonewall people who are on paper better than you. I was absolutely floored by this. But boys, I don't know if you caught it, but I hope that you did, because they've yet to concede a goal in this FA Cup. They haven't conceded a single goal in this competition. This is a non-league side, by the way. Semi-professional players.
I mean, I'll just say this, Joseph, about that draw. I mean, I didn't get a chance to catch most of that match. I caught the tail end. It was on ESPN Plus streaming deep, deep in the crevices of their... selections. So you, during the FA Cup tournaments, they put all of the Premier League matches towards the top of their selections and moved that one towards the bottom, obviously with Bournemouth not playing in the Prem at the moment. Again, this is a non-league side, as you said, fifth tier in England. I'm really excited to see what they can do in the rest of the tournament. You know, this is a league, as you indicated, of giant killers. This is a competition of that. So I'm just really excited to see what happens with them going forward.
I also want to point out that they play at a ground called Meadow Park in Bournemouth. They were founded in 1948. They're a 74-year-old club with a 4,500-seater capacity stadium. Only 1,700 of those seats are seats. Their manager is also their player, Luke Garrard, as I mentioned before. Right? Just, and the owner of the club had to remortgage his house to keep the club afloat during the coronavirus pandemic. And they are now in the fifth round, I think, of the FA Cup. Unbelievable story. Rossler, Jonathan, have at. What do you think of this?
I think it's absolutely brazy that they're in the fifth round of the FA Cup. Absolutely wild.
And I'm actually, I think they're going to beat Everton too. I think they're going to do it. I think Frank Lampard is not, as we've seen, he's not up for managing in big time moments. And this is a big moment. So I'm going to ride with a little bit of FA Cup magic. And I think Bournemouth is going to advance. But it's just a wild story. Like these are people that you would see just, you know, at Tesco, like working the cash register at Tesco and out on the pitch against professional players and is doing them to multiple rounds, like just to even get here. It's just incredible. So I'm all for the Cinderella story. So good on them. Good on them for getting this far. And, you know, there's no reason, there's no rhyme or reason why I think Everton is going to lose. I just want to ride with Borum. So good on them. Truly.
Well, sir, your thoughts?
Fortunately, I wasn't able to catch this match.
I've only just said that you can skip, so I apologize. I do need to make one slight correction. Luke Garrard is not the a player. He is the manager. The person I've confused him with was their standout midfielder in Mark Ricketts. Mark Ricketts was the one that sent the entire Meadow Lane into raptures when he scored. And again, I stress they have not conceded a single goal in this competition. They have gone through, and I'm still counting them here, quite a few rounds in this FA Cup. I want to make it perfectly clear. These boys are no slouch. They really have been fantastic. They have former, like, you know, professional players. Like, I see Niall Ranger is here. I see Mark Ricketts is here. As I said, he started his career in like 2005, and he's done like 162 appearances for Bournemouth. But he's played for Ebbsfleet Town. You know, he's played professional football, but he's now playing for a non-league side. But you know what I mean?
Let me just say, some of these players probably work at Job Center Plus, and they're going to be Employee of the Month based off of this result alone.
Oh my God. Let's move on. So basically,
get out of here.
It's so disrespectful. Moving on, Nottingham Forest did it again. Their second Premier League culling on the bounce. First, it was Arsenal, now Leicester City, and they made Leicester City look like Sunday League. They beat them 4-1. Who wants to go ahead and open up on the gambit on this one? Because I personally, when I watched the match back, the goals that Nottingham Forest was scoring made Brendan Rodgers look like he forgot how to manage a football side. Is that harsh to say? I don't know. Let's open up to the floor. Boys, this match was something.
It certainly was. You know, obviously I am no fan of Brendan Rodgers considering his ties to a rival of Manchester United. Poo-poo on him as a man and a brand. But, you know, this match, I did catch it. Did see a Nottingham Forest side that did turn over Arsenal do numbers, but that turned over Arsenal spank. I'm just going to say it. They spanked Leicester City. Nottingham currently is, sitting in seventh place in their table. I know when pundits like to talk about these kind of things, they like to say that, you know, the Premier League is leaps and bounds better than any other league in the, you know, any other league in the world. And, you know, tournaments like the FA Cup prove it. Well, then why was it so easy for Nottingham Forest, which is a club that is currently sitting seventh in their division at the moment in England, turning over a Leicester side? Yes. Did they play youngsters? Sure. But Leicester has youngsters that are currently playing first team football when they are not playing the FA Cup. So again, like, did they use a backup keeper? Yes. Again, this is a tournament. I feel like this leads to a greater conversation, obviously not for this episode, but this leads to a greater conversation of, do these Premier League clubs actually care about cup tournaments in these later rounds? Because while I appreciate the youngsters getting the opportunity to play, when we look at the results and we see them getting turned over, that does terrible things for morale later on in their careers, and particularly immediately in their careers. But, you know, it doesn't impact them later. So I said that, so I said that incorrectly. It impacts them immediately, particularly if they're going back to playing in the under 23s and the under 20s immediately after playing, you know, in the getting the opportunity to play in the FA Cup. So, you know, for the players that are playing first team football that are, you know, under, you know, that are under a certain age, that are youngsters in the club, and then, you know, like Leicester was playing in this match, and for them to get turned over in the manner that they did, again, by a Nottingham Forest side that has, you know, a European pedigree. This is a club that has, you know, has more Champions League titles than Manchester City. So, who has none, by the way. So, again, like...
Very subtle.
It's subtle, but it's true. And John knows it. That's why he's trying. That's why this club is trying so hard to win a Champions League this year and every year. But anyway, you know, again, credit to Nottingham Forest to turning over Leicester after, or spanking Leicester after turning over Arsenal. So that's all I'll say.
There was no need to even bring that up, but you know, it's all good. It's all good. Well, I'll let that slide. You know, y'all have suffered enough this past season. Credit to Nottingham Forest for one, just doing what they need to do to advance. And you mentioned at the top, Joseph, about Brendan Rodgers and his management style. And this is like very akin to what happened to Liverpool on his last season, is where the players just don't have the fight. Or he's not motivating his players enough. And it clearly showed here, because I'm looking at the lineup. Who do we have here? We have Kelechi Iheanacho. We have Harvey Barnes, who was killing it this past weekend against West Ham. James Maddison, you know, he's supposed to be a Manchester United player, or was linked to them. We got Lookman, a great winger, repatriated to his ancestral Nigeria. Shout out to him. Ndidi in midfield. We have Yuri Tielemans in midfield. So, I mean, this team should be turning sides over, no problem. But to get whooped like this, just embarrassing. And it falls on the manager. It really falls on Brendan Rodgers, I think. Because we have a talented side here. And even without Jamie Vardy, who is critical, I understand, it's very critical to this team succeeding, not only in the FA Cup or in the Premier League or whatever ambitions they have in Europe, which, you know, always flounder. But point being is that you can't be losing 4-1 to Nottingham Forest. I know Nottingham Forest is a Cinderella team, not on the same level as Borum, but you can't be losing to this team if you're the Premier League team and you're a defending FA Cup winner. And this is the tournament where you have the best chance of winning silverware. I think it falls on Brendan Rodgers. And I think he admits that too. So it's going to be interesting to see how they continue for the rest of the season. They bounced back against West Ham. They got a really good draw against them in the Premier League, but just embarrassing. So, but credit to Nottingham Forest for doing what it takes to advance.
You know what? I think there's something to be said for the African players that we just mentioned that play for Leicester. Certainly where Kelechi Iheanacho is concerned, the man just got back from AFCON. Nigeria crashed out in disappointing fashion. You know, it was expected that he was going to be, you know, through to the final. You mentioned Ndidi there, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a healthy Nigerian contingent at Leicester City, So I'm pretty sure that their form is dipped, just in the same way that I think that Thomas Partey's is dipped, because he's also come home early. You know what I'm saying? So to throw them into a competition that they really didn't have their hearts set on, because they thought they would still be competing in AFCON, the one that they did have their hearts and minds focused and centered and honed in on, it's disappointing. So they're kind of a bit jarred. So they have to pick themselves back up somehow. And I don't think the FA Cup was a good enough venue for that. So I feel for Leicester City in that aspect. I feel for their supporters because it can kind of relate. We had a player sent off. And he just literally fresh off the red eye, as you were mentioning in previous episodes. So, but that's nothing. I'm taking nothing away from Nottingham Forest. They played brilliantly. They were ruthless. They were lethal up front. And they really brought it. They really brought it to them. The other side that I have to shout out as well is Luton Town. They are through to the fifth round proper. They will be facing off against Chelsea. They beat their heated rivals in Cambridge United 3-0, and they did it away. Fantastic achievement. They're in the fifth round. They got Chelsea at home. It'll be tough work, but Kenilworth Road is a very tough place to play. So I hope the Chelsea supporters and the, well, not the Chelsea supporters, but the Chelsea players really aren't expecting a gracious welcome. Kenilworth Road is not known for that. So good luck. The rest of the fifth round looks like Peterborough United. They will be hosting Manchester City. I'm not expecting any miracles there, but Peterborough, the posh have done well to get this far. Crystal Palace have got Stoke City. Middlesbrough will be hosting Tottenham. I'm looking forward to seeing Spurs crash out here. As I mentioned before, Chelsea will be going to Luton to face Luton Town. West Ham United will be going down to the South Coast to face Southampton. Norwich will be going to Liverpool. Boreham Wood will be going to Everton. And finally, Huddersfield Town will be hosted by Nottingham Forest. So, very healthy mix of clubs, healthy mix of leagues in that competition. Looking all quite tasty. Let's go to Germany. Bundesliga. We're going to keep the upset theme going because no one had Bochum beating Bayern Munich 4-2. I'm pretty sure that the bookies' odds were kind of ridiculous that day. But that's what happened. Gentlemen, I'll start with Neil. Captain, what happened?
I mean, you know, first of all, not only did Bochum win, but they were dominating that entire match. And the only reason that Bayern ended up getting two back was because Bochum was just tired. They still won, which is a tremendous thing. They made it easier for the rest of the top four, mainly Dortmund, to get a few games in. Bayern still has a massive goal difference that it's going to be really difficult for the remainder of the season for the top three clubs to come close. But this is a significant loss. You know, this is a Bayern side that isn't playing in the German Cup, the DFB Pokal. They got bounced out of that early, which was another shock. But you know, I think, and we're going to talk about it later when, you know, when we go over the Champions League and you know, their run of form there. Listen, I'm not going to say, it's too early to say that Bayern is losing its grip on the title in the Bundesliga. It's too early to say that they aren't going to win the Champions League. Because those are the only two tournaments they're playing in at the moment, right? So this loss is significant. This is a Bochum side that really had nothing to play for. They're just trying to stay up. You know, they're currently sitting in, you know, towards the bottom of the table at the moment. And they needed this win. They obviously needed this win more for their morale than anything else. You know, the three points over Bayern is a big deal. So yeah, winning 4-2 was pretty significant. For most of the match, they were winning for most of the match, it was 4-0 for a majority of the 90 minutes. So, you know, obviously, right. And then Kingsley Coman scored right before halftime. And then Bayern scored again very, very late in extra time. So, you know, again, Bayern rescued some points from this match, but they still lost. And this hurt. This is only hurting their morale, and it's one of those things.
They're still the team to beat. So exactly. a couple of things. First of all, Bochum are actually doing not too badly. They're in 11th. They are 10 points off of the bottom table. Well, not the very bottom of the table, like second from bottom, which I think is the relegation playoff place in the Bundesliga. They're currently sitting on 28 points, and they have a negative 8 goal difference, but they've got 8 wins, 10 losses, 4 draws. And they've added to their goal tally. Now, that Kingsley Coman goal actually was credited to Robert Lewandowski. Don't ask me why. But they opened the scoring. They opened in 9 minutes and then conceded in 14. Then conceded 4 straight from that 14th-minute goal. They conceded, well, that 3 straight, really, because they had 4. 38th minute, they gave away a penalty. Then they gave away another goal 2 minutes after that. Then another goal 4 minutes after that. The thing that gets me about Bayern Munich is that when they collapse, they tend to hit their face real hard in the dirt. Now, that doesn't mean much for the standings. They're still sitting on 52 points. They still only have lost 4 times this season. They've only conceded 25 goals this season, which is level with Freiburg, I think, in terms of the lowest amount conceded. They've scored over 70. They're still the team to beat. So teams like Bochum are always going to be up for trying to beat Bayern Munich.
That's and a mad stat, scoring 70 goals in how many games? How many matches?
It's only 22 matches played. So, like, you see what I mean? Like, that's crazy. I think Bayern Munich really let themselves down. Neil is absolutely right there. And it's going to be a dent in the morale. But they can pick it back up. They have to. And the reason why they might feel a bit more assured is because of what happened next. Bayern Leverkusen. Let's talk about Bayern Leverkusen. Let's talk about Leon Bailey's former club. They managed to slap Borussia Dortmund about, who, granted, are going through the worst injury spell I've ever seen in my entire life. Let me just go ahead and throw that one out there, in fairness to Borussia Dortmund. But they got hammered. 5-2. Absolutely trounced. Now, to the resident Borussia Dortmund supporter here, Captain, what happened?
Bayern Leverkusen matches as a Dortmund supporter are never matches that I look forward to, because they are always going to be high scoring. They are always going to be back and forth. This is a match that Bayer Leverkusen dominated. I mean, again, I'm not going to make, just like I wasn't making excuses for United in the, you know, losing to Middlesbrough in the penalties when we were talking about the FA Cup, I'm not going to make excuses for Dortmund in this match either. Bayer Leverkusen was the better side on the day. It's not a matter of just scoring more goals. It's a matter of, as you already said, you know, Dortmund is suffering so many injuries. So many players that normally don't get starts are starting. They're not necessarily starting out of position. It's just that they don't have a lot of reps with the first team. So, because they're usually sitting on the bench while the first team is usually out there. And we're dealing with a striker in Erling Haaland who is thinking about where he is going in the summer and not necessarily caring about what is happening with his team while he's, you know, quote unquote, nursing an injury, right? Now, obviously his injury is pretty significant, so I'm not going to knock the fact that he isn't injured. However, again, like as you already said, Joseph, this is a side that's suffering injuries all across the board. And I really I was obviously disappointed. But as you know, as I said, when you initially gave me the opportunity to speak, Bayern Leverkusen matches are never one as a Dortmund supporter that I look forward to. This one, this result is no different.
Well, there you have it, buckos. That's the Bundesliga for you. Let's go ahead and keep it moving. The Milanese derby down in Italy actually was worthy of a mention. I'm not sure what to say about it, apart from the fact that it was decent viewing. You know what I mean? Decent viewing. But I'll open up.
It was decent viewing. I don't know if you're going to throw to me, Joseph, or not, as the Inter supporter here.
I figured you'd be the person to start. So, yes.
You know, this was a weekend that, a lot of the clubs that I support did not perform well. Dortmund didn't perform well against Bayern Leverkusen. Manchester United did not perform well in the FA Cup draw against Middlesbrough. Inter Milan, who share the San Siro with AC Milan, did not perform in the Milan Derby. The early in the match, if you watched it from the opening whistle to the closing whistle, this was a match that literally Inter had several chances to score early. They were out playing AC Milan early in the match for about maybe the first 25 to 30 minutes of the match. And, you know, once AC Milan scored the first goal, Inter was battling the entire time. They just capitulated the first. And it really is upsetting because, you know, Handanovic is getting older. Obviously, former Ajax goalkeeper Onana is coming in the summer, has officially been cleared and will be coming to Inter and will probably be the first keeper on Inter's sheet going forward. But Handanovic really did not play well. He's had a really bad run of form recently. We'll talk about, when we get to the Champions League, we'll talk about his run of form in that match. I'm sure Rossler is going to celebrate it when we get there. But I was not happy with that result, obviously. I was really looking forward to the Milan Derby is always one that I look forward to. It was on primetime. It was on CBS, which was a really big deal. So get that primetime viewing to be on the main network for CBS was a big deal to get all those eyes on that match. ESPN take notice because you still aren't showing major matches on your major networks. You're still putting them on streaming. So credit to CBS for not putting that on Paramount. They did put it on Paramount Plus, but they also put it on their main network. So credit to CBS for doing that, because usually they don't. Usually I'm ragging on CBS for not showing matches on basic cable. But yeah, I as far as this result, I was disappointed. I think Inter had chances. They didn't take advantage of them. And Handanovic really had some opportunities to stop stop the goals that went in, and he didn't. And, AC Milan, unfortunately, won the Milan Derby, which sucks to say.
It was a great match. I think all credit goes to Olivier Big Sexy Giroud for doing the damn thing out there. And the last thing I want to say is Teo Hernandez needs to get jumped by somebody. That's all I got to say about the Milan Derby.
Harsh. Very harsh indeed. But I mean, he was a big deal at River Plate, and then he went to AC Milan to great fanfare, and he hasn't really done anything, you know what I mean? But yeah, shout out to Big Sexy, you know? And yes, Rosler, Olivier, Big Sexy, Giroud, that is always, that's what I have called him. You know, he didn't get it from nowhere. The man is called Big Sexy. You know, put respect on Olivier Giroud's name. He scores sexy goals and he looks sexy as hell. That is what he does in true Frenchman fashion. The man lives up to the standard. Anyway, Milanese derby. There it is in the books. Inter Milan probably should have done a lot better than they did. They did have chances to win it, but when AC Milan were all over them, they just didn't have any answers. And, you know, AC Milan got the all-important 3 points. Keep tabs on Serie A, but we'll move into the Champions League because the Champions League is back. So a lot of those matches that we talked about in the FA Cup, the Bundesliga and Serie A, that all happened towards the beginning of the month. At the time of recording, the Champions League is now back, and that happened yesterday. Tuesday. I'm going to give you the results, and then I'll go ahead and let the boys tear in. PSG managed to do Real Madrid 1-0. Sporting Lisbon decided to go ahead and get slapped by Manchester City 5-0. Inter Milan had no answer for Liverpool 2-0. And Salzburg managed to get a point off of Bayern Munich 1-1. Very notable results there. In the Europa League, Napoli and Barca had a 1-1 draw. Sevilla and Zagreb, Zagreb didn't have too much for them. Sevilla won 3-1. And then Rangers and Borussia Dortmund. And you know what? Borussia Dortmund are really making a habit of getting their asses kicked right now. But again, with respect to injuries, still sad to see. Rangers did them 4-2. So out of all of those notable continental results. Oh, wait. Special mention. We got a shout out a club called Glimt. I think that's how you pronounce that. Not only did they dump Spurs out of the competition in Europa Conference League, they have also managed to turn over Celtic. That's right. The Scottish Premiership legends in Celtic got done by a club from a country that I'm not even entirely sure yet because I haven't even looked them up. All right. 4-2, they beat them. Now, gentlemen, out of all of these results, have at what stole your heart? What encourages you? What do you see these competitions going? Dig in.
I think for me, the biggest match between the Champions League matches you mentioned, the Europa League and the Europa League division matches as well, the Conference League. I think for me, of all those matches, PSG Real Madrid was the title fight, right? Because you had so many names on both sides. You had Lionel Messi and Kylian Mbappe and, you know, Neymar on one side, and you had Modric and Karim Benzema and Vinicius Jr. Playing for Real Madrid. And it was a title fight. I didn't expect it to be like a scoring fest, you know, and it wasn't that. It literally lived up to its billing, and Kylian Mbappe scored in extra time, or close to extra time rather. He had several chances early in the match. Real Madrid really didn't have an answer for them, despite the fact that they were attacking. And PSG, they have a lot of players. Prior to recording, we talked about the PSG having so many players kind of free form and kind of just playing all over the place. This match was no different. I got to give credit to Pochettino, despite the fact that, you know, he's been rumored to be leaving the club at the end of the year. And either, you know, he's been linked to Manchester United, been linked back to Tottenham Hotspur. He's been linked to several spaces. And I think given the opportunity to stay at PSG for maybe another season or two, depending on how they finish in Ligue 1 and depending on how they finish in the Champions League, I think if he stays at PSG, he could, you know, do great things with the pieces that he has, because he has a lot of pieces there, and he has a lot of leadership in that locker room. And PSG, you know, I think it's one of the, obviously the biggest piece to the PSG Real Madrid match was Kylian Mbappe playing with more than likely his next club in Real Madrid. And that's what that was the big talking point. And what did he do? He scored against them. you know, playing for the club that he currently collects his wages from in PSG. So, you know, credit to him for doing what needed to be doing. And you know, Kylian is one, if not the greatest strikers in Europe. And he proved it yet again with his last minute heroics. So, you know, that for me was the greatest match. Obviously, you know, Dortmund didn't perform well in Europa League. Celtic lost to Glimt in the Conference League. And Atletico Madrid, Inter lost to Liverpool. Atletico Madrid is about to play Manchester United. Liverpool did not outplay Inter in that match, despite what Rosler is getting ready to tell you. Handanovic is just not, he's on his last legs. I think he knows that Onana is coming and getting ready to take his number one from him. And he hasn't been playing for the club right now. He's been elsewhere in his mind. Between the Milan Derby and this recent draw against Liverpool, the two goals that Liverpool scored were with the one was within Handanovic's reach, and the other one was a blocked view, so he couldn't see it. And I'm sorry, the second one from Salah didn't even have all the pace behind or the power behind the shot. He just kind of tapped it in. There was no power behind that second goal, and Handanovic just kind of let it roll past him. And I'm just like, that's a ball you usually catch and throw all the way down to the other side of the pitch, and you just kind of let that roll past you easily. And yeah, I'm not going to rail against Handanovic too much because he is still a world-class goalkeeper, and any club would love to have him. But right now, recently, he's been terribly out of form. And this Liverpool match was another example of that. But I'm going to let the other guys in the pub talk more about that and some of these other matches they enjoyed.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out, one, to you know, my club, Manchester City, doing a damn thing in Lisbon. Ruben Amorim, the manager for Sporting Lisbon, says his role model was Jose Mourinho, and we whooped him just like Pep Guardiola sides always do to Jose Mourinho sides. So big up to City. Shout out to Red Bull Salzburg, particularly Matthias Jassil, I think is how you pronounce his name, 33 years old, manager for Red Bull Salzburg. Doing the damn thing against Bayern. I know we talked about them earlier, but this is what happens. I said it in the Discord, which you all should follow, but this is what happens when you follow Ragnick's tactics. Because for those that don't already know, Ralf Ragnick was the sporting director for both Red Bull Salzburg and RB Leipzig, and still follow the same tradition and style that he instilled in the clubs. So they're great. They got three Africans in the front, Nigerians, nonetheless, leading the side. So
Big up to Red Bull Salzburg for doing a damn thing. And they might actually pull it off. Who knows? Who knows what might happen in Bayern? Or in Munich, I'm sorry. Who knows what might happen? So shout out to them. And yeah, I think for the Europa League, Dortmund, they cannot defend to save their lives. And this is what costs them in the Bundesliga all the time. So it's not a surprise that Rangers did them like this. They are proving themselves as a habitual choke artist. So that's rough. I watched a Napoli-Barca game. Great match. I think Barca's back in that sense. They stomped Atletico. Sorry, Neil. Oh,
stop.
But they stopped them. Let's be real.
Don't give them hope. Wait.
Yeah, we'll wait, because Napoli is a great side too, and Osimhen didn't do the damn thing like I thought he would against Piqué and Garcia, but they had to play in Napoli, so we'll see what happens. I think Napoli might pull it off, but yeah, I think that's what my thoughts from the match. And Sevilla, Anthony Martial, Manchester United let him go. And then look what's happening. This boy is thriving now. He had a great match this past week in La Liga and scored a goal
again. Let him go on loan. On loan. He is on loan. He is still collecting wages for Manchester United. Continue, John.
And what he's not doing is scoring for Manchester United right now.
Correct. And again, I can talk about this all day, but we have already done this in the set piece. We don't need to do this right now. We just see who was right in the end. Anyway.
You can run it back, bro. It's okay.
No. I'm just going to let that one hang in suspense. You know what? You know, a man might just light his spliff while on air and just let it chill.
Say, while you're doing that, I will quickly comment on the Liverpool match because I'm going to be selfish and just talk about my team really quick. For most of the match, Liverpool was on the ropes. And Inter did, like Neil said, had a few chances, as did Liverpool. And it was just kind of like a back and forth, and you were just kind of waiting for the first break in the game to change the tide a bit. And once the first goal went in, it was kind of, I think it was like at the 70th minute. Neil, is that correct? 75. It was about 75. Once that happened, you can kind of see Inter kind of losing it a bit. There were some subs that were made. And I really like this guy.
Lucas
Diaz. Yeah, he didn't score, but he just kind of brings a different energy to the game. And he had a big influence on the match, even though he didn't score. And I know the person that's celebrating the most right now is Salah. Because he's not getting bullied at AFCON anymore. He looked really happy to be back.
Well, yeah, he didn't have to put pace behind his shot to get it past that Danube.
Bro, it went in the goal, man. It doesn't matter how much pace was on it. If it goes in, it doesn't matter.
No power behind that shot.
You can just kick a bunny in there. If it goes past, that's all that counts.
Wow.
The way he had to shoot that shot was crazy. Because he was...
What I'm going to need you to do, Rossler, mm-hmm. is tell Jurgen, your manager, to mm-hmm. put Andy Robertson and TN Trent on a bike, because Perisic and Dumfries had those boys like running like smoked turkeys. I have never seen Denzel Dumfries turn around, you know, because Denzel wasn't just playing on the wings. He was mm-hmm. cutting inside. Ivan Perisic wasn't just playing on the wings. He was also cutting inside from the other side. And Trent, bless his heart, tried desperately to stop Perisic a number of times, and he just got past him. And he didn't have to turn.
That's my point. Like, they should have taken advantage of that, because none of that shows up on the scoreboard.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah. I agree.
Like, that's what happened to them.
It's unfortunate. Like, they had opportunities to win that game. They just had to close it. And it could have been over a lot sooner than when Liverpool actually made those subs and scored. It seemed to me, even though the possessions at the end of the game was skewered more toward Liverpool before those two goals broke. It seemed like they were controlling the ball and keeping the ball away from Liverpool very well. And I think that could be a blueprint to kind of...
Yeah. No, I agree. But, I think it's like both matches were tailored. Like this match for Inter, this Champions League match, and then the Milan Derby were like a tale of two halves because they were pressing really, really well in both first halves. And then something happened in that second half. The opposing team switched their tactics and then Inter just collapsed and it let them just run them all over. So it's a learning lesson.
I think what you really think of when it goes right back to is the fact that, you know, Inter did not take their chances. Again, classic case of what we saw in the Milanese derby. They did not have their shooting boots on. They did not take advantage of their chances. And they did not deserve to win as a result of that. Liverpool, without their talisman that evening, if I do remember rightly, I think Salah's back. Wait, was Salah and Mane? Both players were back. Yeah, but they weren't at full strength, and it showed, but they took their chances. So that's the difference. I feel like Inter have to kick themselves, really, for not managing to go ahead and put the sword through Liverpool when they had them put to the sword, certainly in the in the opening going in the first half. It really was the repeat of the Milanese derby. Had them on the ropes at the beginning and then he just didn't finish your dinner. And now here they come to go ahead and clear the plate. So, a shout out to Glimt. Jesus Christ. Just taking heads off the Europa Conference League. Spurs and Celtic now. Man, they're just racking them up. The Bournemouth FC of Europe is Glimt. I looked up this club, right? You're never gonna. Can anybody guess where this club is from? Just guess. What country are they from?
I looked them up, but so I ain't gonna answer.
Take a wild guess. Just a wild guess.
I'm going to say a Nordic country, just in the interest of time.
Mm-hmm. It is a Nordic country. Yep. It's a Nordic country. No, the takers. Well, they're Norwegian. Okay. I don't know how to pronounce their name. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce their name. All I know that I do know how to pronounce is Glimt. So from here on in, I will be referring to them as Glimt. Their colors are yellow and black. I wouldn't say that the kit is drippy, but it's not bad. It's a good color of yellow. Anyway, they're what division do they play in now? They do play in the elite Serien, I think is how you pronounce that. The top Norwegian football division. And they are defending champions, back-to-back champions. Well, in 2020 for the pandemic, that was cancelled. But then, of course, they came back and they won. They're still top of the division. They won it in 2021, so they have it. They have done Spurs, and now they have done Celtic. They beat them 4-2. Absolutely incredible stuff. If you haven't had a chance to see the highlights or watch the match, please go back and watch that. Incredible stuff. They play in a town that is like a small town. Their capacity stadium is 7,354. And they are an 105-year-old club. Unbelievable. Their nickname is either the Lightning, which is what Glimt means, or the Den Gul Horde, which is the Yellow Horde, or the Super Laget. I don't know how you pronounce it. I don't speak Norwegian. I do apologize if I've butchered how you pronounce these, but I just think it's fascinating that here's a club that is really going for it, and they're taking out some of Europe's top clubs, some of the biggest clubs historically in Europe along the way. I love seeing it. So yeah, that's going to do it for Around the Pitch. Going to pay a few bills. And then we'll be right back with the main segment. So don't go away.
The goddamn sauce. 9 different flavors, same goddamn feeling. Share our passion for sauce and discover the full goddamn range at www.thegdsauce.com. Use discount code TheBanterPubFC to save 50% when you cop the sauce. Hashtag boss up.
Welcome back, bitches. It's the main segment time. The news, as you will. You hear this music anyway, you know what time it is. Time to talk about some stuff that might not have happened on the pitch, but certainly affects the game, you know. The tea, if you will. We're going to first open with the FIFA president, Gianni Infantino. Once again, opening his mouth and sticking his foot in it. He once suggested in the last couple of weeks that hosting the World Cup every 2 years could do a lot to reduce refugees. Do not ask me what methodology this man has for making such a insane comment. Pardon the ableism, but like, it is absolutely unreal that somebody would suggest that that is something that you can do to help stem African migrants risking their lives to cross into Europe to get away from the war and the famine that is currently plaguing their nations. Again, war that was brought to their doorstep by you, and this is true, European nations. But we won't get into that, right? Gentlemen, before I open up the floor, I'm going to go ahead and say or quote what is quoted here from Gianni Infantino. And then you can go ahead and just say whatever you want to say about this bald-headed fuckwit. But here we go. He said, towards the end of a 15-minute address, and this is as per Middle East Eye, thank you very much for that. Do go check them out. They do wonderful coverage. But towards the end of a 15-minute address, Infantino brought up his proposal to change football's quadrennial international tournament into a biennial event. Quote, we see that football is going into a direction where few have everything and the vast majority has nothing, he said. In Europe, the World Cup takes place twice per week because the best players are playing. But elsewhere in the world, Infantino posited the same levels of hope and opportunities were not available. He said that those outside Europe were being told to, quote, give us your money, but watch us on TV. Close quote, open quote, we need to include them. We need to find ways to include the entire world, to give hope to Africans so they don't need to cross the Mediterranean in order to find maybe a better life, but more probably death in the sea. We need to give opportunities and we need to give dignity, not by giving charity, but by allowing the rest of the world as well to participate. Close quote. There's more. But I think you get the gist of where we're going with this. So, gentlemen, floor is open.
I mean, you know, FIFA being xenophobic, you know, we've been here before. FIFA's presidents being xenophobic, being outwardly racist, being anti-migrant. We've been here before. This is nothing new. So, you know, this quote, this statement, you know, as of this recording, there's been no apology given. This is as anti-migrant as you can possibly be. This is as anti-marginalized as you could possibly be. But again, look at the material. You know, this is a governing body that raises marginalized homes in order to create makeshift stadiums and, you know, practice grounds for international clubs to practice on prior to tournaments happening. So we should not be surprised. Like, you know, there is the famous quote during this Black History Month that I'm going to repeat when people show you who they are the first time, believe them. This is another example of that. This is another example of that. And what we have to do as a culture is counter this, and I appreciate Middle East Eye for their commentary. As you said, Joseph, they are at the forefront of, kind of counterculture commentary in the newsroom. So I appreciate their forefront reporting on this. But again, this is nothing new. We're used to this. We have to counter this as quickly and as often as possible. And listening to this podcast, hearing what we have to say, participating in our Discord, engaging with us on social media, that's a good place to start. But we have to, as a culture, consistently counter this, consistently deprogram, consistently counterculture. Because otherwise, comments like this are going to go on repeat on a consistent basis. I've already said we've been here before. I'm going to let Rossler and John speak on this as well, but I just had to start off by saying, and I'm going to end by saying, we've heard this before.
Yeah, this seas of desperation by Infantino, I think, as we all know, there's money to be made by having a World Cup every 2 years, and the players don't want it. Some associations don't want it. It just really is a desperate thing to do that. And considering, in my regular 9-to-5, I was just on a call actually today. We're discussing like work around like what's happening in Qatar around the treatment of migrant workers and the organizing that needed to happen in order for actually labor gains to be made for migrant workers in Qatar, who, as you all know, and it's been reported on many times, the violations of workers, the deaths of workers in Qatar in order to make sure the World Cup happens in 2022 was appalling. So I'm not surprised by it, like Neil said. And like you said, Joseph, at the top, like the issues of migrant labor and just folks traveling to Europe from Africa, is FIFA is not going to solve that problem. Actually, they're part of that problem too. So I'm not surprised by it. The statement sucks as usual. And FIFA is actually not doing anything to address migrant issues, period, based off of how they operate during World Cup. So this is only going to, like y'all have just said, like this is just exacerbating the problem. There needs to be a total restructuring or reshifting of the balance of power in relation to that, particularly now when they're becoming to the Americas. They be coming to the United States, the Mexico and Canada in 2026. And we know there's going to be issues, particularly when they subcontract migrant labor to build the stadiums, staff the transportation, and do all these important things that FIFA needs desperately for people to pay for. So we'll see what happens. But, Infantino is, he's thinking about making money, period, at any cost. And of course, he's going to say these type of things. So it sucks. And I'm not surprised by it. But thankfully, there's organizing that's happening to really stop this plan from happening, this 2 year World Cup thing. And the players, like I said, the players are not for it. So if the players aren't for it, it might not happen. My fingers are crossed. We'll see what happens later on this year when the board decides. But it's a joke. It's a joke to me.
The fact that he would think that he can say this and nobody would have issue with it just shows the lack of respect that he has for the average fan, for people who follow the sport, for people that build the stadiums, for the players, for everybody. Because to say something so disingenuous and not even tangentially related to the issue is baffling to me. Because how can you say you want to make it better for these people that you're not paying well, having terrible living conditions for, mistreating them. There have been reports of, and I won't say these are factual, but I've seen the stories that those workers get taken advantage of and their passports are taken and their documents end up getting taken from them so they can't go back. And it's even more insulting to think, why would you single out Africans when the World Cup not too long ago was in Brazil and you had a migrant issue there as well and a labor issue there? And you want to make it seem like you're doing these people a favor by making it happen more often when a lot of these new stadiums get built. And I think Brazil is a great example. They just don't end up getting used. And you have this money that could have been used for the infrastructure of the country. Or you even pay the people that are working to set up these events. Like, it's just such a dumb, dumb thing to say. And there's no foresight or care for these people. Like everyone has said, it's just about making money. And they're trying to just shoehorn it and make it seem like it's a humanitarian effort and we want to do better for these people, but it's so far from that. And they just look and align their pockets, because if they really wanted to take care of these people and they wanted things to be better for them, they'd be talking about initiating programs to make sure that there's long-term benefits, long-term jobs, long-term investments for these workers that are just kind of used and abused and tossed away when they're not useful to them anymore.
All right. Well, I mean, here's the thing. I think we have to come back to terms with, is as Neil said, we know who we're dealing with. We're dealing with an organization that wants to put its tournaments on in host venues completely tax-free. We see what happened with the US 2026 bid. Plenty of people dropped out. You know what I mean? And because of that, because people dropped out, it was because there was FIFA was inflexible with their tax waiver requirement in order for anybody to host the tournament. Look, it's also a combination of Jonathan's synopsis as well, where it does smack of desperation. They wanted every 2 years to keep the money rolling in. But please be advised that this is an organization that has $1 billion in reserves, as last reported in what, 2016, I think it was, maybe. They're not hard up for cash. They're just trying to keep the current greed model rolling. They rinsed Brazil. They rinsed South Africa. I don't know how much they got off of Russia. And they're getting plenty off of Qatar. And Qatar are happy to pay for it because they actually have the deep pockets. But at the end of the day, 2022, next one is 2026. Could be in the US, joint hosted by Canada and Mexico. Again, the reason why they're adopting what the UEFA has done with the Euros recently is because they're trying to maximize the profits. It's all about the money, son. That is what they want. That is it. That's my thing. It's not just one thing. It is a combination thereof. It's a perfect storm. Yeah, I do think FIFA are desperate. That's why they're trying to push this fucking 2-year plan. But there's no regard for the players either. And that, for me, is not being discussed enough. What? How many players do we got? And we're still in the middle of a pandemic as well, by the way. What are we doing all this shit for? You know what I'm saying? Why are we trying to have 2-year World Cups when we haven't even gotten out of the pandemic and it's been 2.5 years? We have other things we need to be focusing on. This is not going to do anything to reduce migration. If anything, because of the pandemic, is going to cause more people to flee areas, especially when they know that a super spreader event like the fucking World Cup is coming to town. So it goes to what Ross's point was. This man, the fact that he thought that he had the space to say this without pushback, shows how much self-awareness he lacks. It's a combination of what everything has been said by everybody here, for me. Because these are all the same points I was going to make, and they're all backed up by statistics we already know about. scandals that are still yet to be handled. Because remember, while the US is bidding for the World Cup, it's really laying a trap for FIFA. Remember all these guilty pleas that they got off of men like Chuck Blazer and their man there? Blatter and his boy Platini just got roped up by the Swiss authorities. Now, remember, usually FIFA wants things done under Swiss law, Swiss jurisdiction. But the DOJ still wants a few words with a few FIFA men there. I'm saying, I don't know. From my perspective, in terms of like what it means for FIFA, they're trying to get this 2-year plan in place. It's more of a way to, for them to try to set themselves up for an uncertain future. But a 2-year plan with a pandemic that is not nearly under control yet is not going to look good for you. Are you just going to have the football on, but you're not going to have crowds? That doesn't make no fucking sense. It's the World Cup. You know, there's a whole bunch of things that I think that comment shows a severe lack of self-awareness of. Or just a severe lack of awareness, period. Gianni is an idiot. I think that's probably the best way to put a bow on it. So let's go ahead and move to the second thing. Speaking of idiocy, I think that's a perfect segue. Tell me why we have German soccer coaches using fake vaccine passes, according to the Boston Globe. Two German soccer coaches have been suspended from working in the sport after it was ruled on, Wednesday, but this was reported as of the 26th of January. So basically, they used fake coronavirus vaccination records. First one we've talked about previously was Werder Bremen head coach Markus Anfang. His assistant, Florian Jung, has also been done. So both of them were there at Werder Bremen, and both of them are out now. The Federation of Sports Court said that they had significantly infringed against the role model function as a coach. Anfang was banned for a year, fined €20,000, which equates to about $22,500. Jung got 10 months and fined €3,000, which equates to about $3,380. Both bans backdated to start from this November. Lorenz said Anfang and Jung had both admitted to wrongdoing and would have part of their bans converted into probation period from June onward, so they would have a chance to find new employment for the 22-23 season. So my first question is this punishment punitive enough? If not, why not? The second question I have for you all is, what the fuck?
I mean, this isn't the first. This isn't the first fake vaccine passport situation, right, in sport since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic in March of 2020. This is not the first, and it will not be the last. I think that the punishment was harsh enough? No. I think they should be banned from coaching ever, anything, at any level. I think their coaching licenses should be revoked so they don't have the capacity to come back and coach in anywhere in the world at any level. I think they should find new employment. This is not me saying they should be jailed, because I am an abolitionist, right? And I don't think jail is the ultimate answer. I think the fine was not stiff enough. I think the punishment was not stiff enough. But I think there's ways, as I said, full banning, remove their licenses completely, and make it and rule that they cannot coach at any level, not just in Germany, but anywhere in the world. Because if you don't do that, then that doesn't send reverberations to other leagues that you can't do shit like this. You just cannot do shit like this.
Yeah, this is a tough one, because it's more than an individual thing with these two managers. And it's I say that because this is a, obviously we know there's a whole discussion around vaccine mandates that's happening, not just in Germany, but all over Western nations, including ours now. Anyway, we know what's going on in several of the states in the United States around that. And I'm shocked for a place like Germany, although it doesn't have, like, you know, a completely solid, like, or maybe it does have a solid healthcare system where everyone is covered and that, you know, there's several places. One is messed up, like, that they would do that, considering, you know, just get vaccinated. Like, what's stopping you from doing that? There are places all over the world. There are many countries all over the world that don't have access to this vaccine. And not because they don't want to have it, but because of our global capitalist system, which denies people access to it, denies people the ability to get it. And, you know, there are other places in the world that are doing great around stopping the virus from spreading that don't have a vaccine mandate at all. And they just have complete faith in their government, complete faith in their healthcare system to make it happen. And they're having conversations with them like adults to do it. So it's sad it has come to a point where people have to be punished here. And like Neil's saying, I'm also about abolitionist. I'm also feel that same way. I don't believe in carceral means to getting people to be vaccinated. Folks should be able to have enough faith and enough solidarity with their friends, their neighbors, people around them to be like, I actually think this is important because I want to be safe. I want people around me to be safe. I care about other people. It's not just about my individual wants and needs. And clearly that message is not coming across in at least the Western world. Because you look at places like Cuba, you look at places like Vietnam and China and the Koreas, like all these places, they don't have mandates. They don't have mandates at all. People are vaccinated at, in the case of Cuba, at least in 90%. China is a different case because China has a zero COVID policy, which has worked well. People are able to get on with their normal lives, which people are trying to do in Western nations too, but people don't want to be vaccinated. They don't want to be tested. They don't want to social distance. They don't want to wear a mask. They don't want to, they don't have access to the healthcare. They don't want to give people like a national healthcare system where it's free. So it was like, you're putting people in a position where these things are just going to keep coming up, but people are going to fake it. And because you have this misinformation that's going out there, that's getting people caught up, because there's no political will, but, and I say this in the case of the United States, I can't speak on Germany, I'm not there, whereas people are not being, they're not being talked to, not being educated around these things. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's, again, it's sad it has come to this where we have to punish people for not being vaccinated or like violating clear rules. But if it's, yeah, it's sad. That's what, it, for me, it's sad. That's what has to come down to. Instead of just being vaccinated, being okay with that, moving all of your life and making sure your community and people around you are safe, it has to come to this. But yeah, this for me, it's a broader discussion about like, what needs to happen? What needs to change here? What dynamics need to shift in a place like Germany or other places in Europe, France, UK, Portugal, Spain, where COVID cases are rising, people are getting sick all the time. Your inaction, or United States is obviously the United States too, Canada, all these places where there is like a dominant feeling about liberty and individual rights and all these things, and not thinking about collective needs, not thinking about what it would take or what you have to sacrifice for people to all be safe. It's just about my needs, about what I want physically, personally, and that's causing this things to happen. So, you know, yeah, it's just messed up. it's just messed up, and you know, this is the reality, and it's not going to change. It's not going to change, unfortunately. There has to be a total social shift, political shift, economic shift too, for us to get out of this funk.
I fully agree with what Jonathan said. And I really am confused, like, the logic behind getting a fake vaccination card. Like, I don't know why they think that it's not tied to anything. Like, it's just a piece of paper that nobody's gonna check, because each card, you know, they have identification numbers of associating when you took it, what day you took it, and it matches up to what's in the database. At least it's like that in the United States. So I'm wondering, like, what the logic is behind getting the fake card and thinking that you're going to get away with it. Like, how far are they thought ahead? And there are times in life where you're going to do things that are against what's expected of you. And if you're claiming you want this autonomy and you don't want to get it, there are consequences for that now. So you need to decide if you're going to deal with those consequences or not, whether you agree with it or not. You shouldn't be trying to, I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. You shouldn't try to be in a certain way and try to be a coward, take the cowardly way out of the situation by half-stepping, by getting a fake vaccination card. It's either you're going to get it and you're going to continue with your job and whatever you're doing, or you're not at this point. And unfortunately, you might be out of a job because of that, or it just might mess up some other aspect of your day-to-day life. But that's what the expectation is right now. And I just don't get the lack of foresight there with getting the fake card. It baffles me.
We said it before and we said it again, gentlemen. It's about the money.
I personally do not feel that they need lifetime bans, but yeah, not for the simple fact that they, it's not really just for the simple fact that they didn't do what they're supposed to do with their COVID records, but it's the fact that they committed fraud for me. You know what I mean? That's serious. And a coach, a manager, a player, we can't have fraud in the sport. You know what I mean? If you'll fake your COVID papers,
if you'll game that system and you'll put so many people's lives at risk, so for the sake of just participating in the sport, you know what I mean? It's a game at the end of the day.
I know it's your livelihood at the same time, but why would you put that at risk by committing fraud? Once again, is what needs to be said here. You committed fraud, and that's a serious crime for me. That's what people should be getting done for. Rather than looking at exclusively within what's supposed to be a temporary lens of a pandemic, look at the long-term ramifications. Forging anything is a form of fraud. So it's a level of trust. And if I can't trust you, I can't have you at my football club. So I'm with a sterner ban, but not a lifetime one, because I think that can be rehabilitated personally. And if there's any country that knows how to rehabilitate people and not just incarcerate them and have an incarceral state, it's Germany. So that's going to do it for the main segment, everybody. We're going to pay a few more bills, and then when we get back, we're going to do extra time. So don't you go away. Love you. We'll be right back.
The goddamn sauce. 9 different flavors, same goddamn feeling. Share our passion for sauce and discover the full goddamn range at www.thegdsauce.com. Hashtag Bows Up.
Extra time, baby. You know what it is, 60 seconds or less. Whatever has been on the host of mine for the last couple of weeks, actually, because, you know, had a little break. I had a football tournament I had to go to, which I will talk about you later. But yes, you know, things to do, places to see. I think that's how that's not how the same goes. Anyway, 60 seconds.
Jonathan, you're up first, mate. What you got?
Thank you, thank you. Well, I live in Orlando, and we have a little bit of a controversy in the art world. We recently opened an exhibit in the Orlando Museum of Art, highlighting the works of Jean-Michel Basquiat. The only thing is, there is questions on the authenticity of the work. The story behind finding these rare unseen paintings on cardboard, it's like they found it in a warehouse or a garage that it wasn't paid for, and it got an estate sale. Well, the New York Times has released a report talking about how some of the art doesn't match up. Like, there's one painting that was made on cardboard that the cardboard wasn't in existence when he was alive. It came out in the mid-90s. So there's a big controversy now in Orlando about where they sold fake Basquiat paintings. So we'll see what happens in the next few weeks, because it's now under a big fire. The curator is on a big, big fire. So I'm interested to see what comes of that.
Not the city of Orlando buying a bootleg. Wow. Thank you, Jonathan. Rosler, you're up next.
I'm going to bring up an oldie but goodie. I think it was Neil that... I feel like everybody's referenced it, but I remember Neil quite adamantly talking about it, but mental health, man, it's important. Take care of yourself. Make sure you're taking breaks. Do what you got to do. And this is the first multi-day recording. If you know, you know. Got to be here to know. That's it.
All right. Thank you, Rosler. El Capitan.
So I'm going to be brief. Shout out to the Washington Spirit for finally doing what's right. I am so glad that we have Michelle Kang as the new 100% owner of the Washington Spirit. Looking forward to holding on to the NWSL Cup when the season kicks off. Hopefully, by the end of the season, retain.
It really is good to see the Spirit finally doing what needed to be done there. And you know what? Shout out to Michelle Kang for actually outsmarting her opposition. Because that clause there, the way that she got the board to basically sell to her directly, making her a majority stakeholder, that was just a masterstroke. She really did play the long game. She dug in, and now she has control of the club that should have been hers from the very beginning. You know what? I don't have too much to say for my extra time, apart from the fact that I really, really enjoyed my time playing in the Blizzard Cup in Albany over the weekend. It was also my birthday on Sunday. After a brief scare, because I did wake up in the ER with no recollection of how I got there, your boy was back on the road anyway, went to brunch. And I got a pretty cool picture out of it, I think. Still alive, motherfuckers. But I'm looking forward to competing in more football tournaments like these. There are a couple of places and a couple of dates coming up in the summer that I've got my ear to the ground for and penciled in. So you never know when a man like Bate Grylls is going to be in your ends. Same. I had a blast. Thank you, Albany. You're gorgeous. You're wonderful. For a capital city, you've got a lovely small town vibe, and I dig that. I really do. And you have the really, really coolest looking performance center I have ever seen in my entire life. Amazing architecture. Can't take anything away from you, Albany. You're great. And I'm looking forward to being back there again next year. And with that, this has been another full fat episode of the Banter Pub FC, the sauciest team in the game, the spiciest takes on the pitch. If I've told you once, I've told you a thousand times, here and we ain't going nowhere. So get at us on Twitter @TheBanterPubFC, on Instagram @TheBanterPubFC.
Twitch stuff is coming soon. Big plans to go ahead and get involved in some of the summer leagues. FIFA, we see you. And FIFA man them, gal them, envies them. Just bring your A game. We're getting very, very prepared here. We've been very hard at work. There's also going to be some really fun digital stuff coming as well. Might have to drop that website on you soon. More on that later. Got written content coming as well, so keep your eyes peeled for that. But apart from anything else, the bread and butter around here is the podcast. So look out for more set pieces. Look out for more full episodes. We're trying to keep up with the rigors of life, but it's pulling us in all sorts of different directions. But we love making these for you. So thank you so much for listening. As always, this is your boy Joseph from El Capitan, Neil, Rossler, and Jonathan. Have a good week, welcome you. This is the Banter Pub FC signing off.